It is Tuesday, September 8th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, we talk with our correspondent in northern Serbia, where refugees fleeing war want to head to Hungary en route to Germany.
Many of the refugees I talked to today tell me they have no clothes, they have no food, they have drinking water, water to wash with, because local town officials set up some showers for them, some makeshift showers.
Guatemalan voters will head to a second round of polling next month to cast ballots for a new president, and we hear about Canadian Indian singer Raghav Mathur. It's all ahead. Authorities are struggling to control refugees entering by the thousands at Hungary's border with Serbia. In a policy shift, Hungary is now granting passage to the Austrian border for those who say they're refugees and not economic migrants. I spoke with VOA correspondent Luis Ramirez.
Sarah, I am in northern Serbia, not far from the Hungarian border. And where I am exactly is the outskirts of a town called Subotica. And at a brick factory outside of the town, it's an abandoned brick factory where hundreds of people, refugees, have been camping out. Now, this is a stop along the route to Western Europe that the refugees are taking. It's one of the stops where, until today, the humanitarian aid had not been reaching. Many of the refugees I talked to today tell me they have no clothes, they have no food, they have drinking water, water to wash with, because local town officials set up some showers for them, some makeshift showers. But they're living in the abandoned brick factory. This is a factory that's been abandoned for about three decades, I'm told, by the locals. And so some have been sleeping in the factory, the old factory warehouses, and some in the, we saw evidence of people having slept, brushed their teeth, eaten in the old kilns. They complain of being very cold. The temperatures do drop to zero Celsius at some point in the night, and there is a shortage of blankets. Now, the UNHCR did arrive here today, Tuesday. It was the first visit by a representative as they're making their way along the route, finding gaps like this one where very limited humanitarian aid has reached people. And the representatives are here assessing the needs, hearing from the refugees, and also listening to their concerns.
Where are these refugees headed?
They all say they want to go to Hungary, and from there to Austria, and from there to Germany. So this is the next stop for them. The concern at this stop is whether or not, or how, I should say, how to reach Hungary and how to cross Hungary, because, of course, the reports are getting back either from the news media or from smartphones, social media, on the conditions in Hungary. The big concern is whether people are being turned back, whether they're being deported, what's happening at Hungary. That's the big question here, and that's what they're trying to figure out before deciding how to go. One of the big concerns for many of the refugees that they're expressing to me today is they don't want to be fingerprinted. And the reason for that is they don't want to create a record for themselves in Hungary that will then, in the event that they are deported, will prevent them from entering the European Union. This stop here in northern Serbia is the last point before they actually enter the European Union.
Yes, because I believe on Friday, you know, late last week, Hungary allowed refugees to be taken by bus to Austria and Germany, I think some trains, but then I think that the officials there were saying they didn't want to, you know, to keep doing that. That was going to come to an end.
That is the warning we're getting from Hungary and also from Austria, that the emergency measures that they've enacted to allow the refugees passage through their territories may not last forever. Certainly a concern is growing, and as a matter of fact, just moments ago, UN officials told me that they are expecting 7,000 refugees to cross the border from Macedonia into Serbia. So this flow of human beings is not slowing down. It appears to be growing. 12 hours ago, the situation is certainly affecting the politics in Hungary. The defense minister was sacked because the prime minister doesn't believe that they're fortifying the fence that divides Serbia and Hungary fast enough. I was in walking along that border fence yesterday, watching as crews are installing razor wire up and down the length of it to prevent migrants from getting through.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Luis, for speaking with me today.
Okay.
That's Luis Ramirez reporting from northern Serbia. Joining me here in the studio is social media editor Andrew Palshevsky. Andrew, what has been the reaction on social media to this flow of refugees?
Well, it's been an interesting reaction. We've talked about it, and as Luis mentioned, these refugees are using social media to communicate, to send news back or get news from people who have already gone forward on routes to get through and best ways to get through as they make this journey. But something I saw that was interesting this morning is an error that Facebook made. This artist in Syria had uploaded a bunch of photos to Facebook of migrants and refugees who had drowned off the coast of Libya. And the photo album took off on Facebook, was viral, had over 100,000 shares. And then Facebook removed it and said, the people claiming this was an act of censorship. And Facebook had to come back and say it was flagged an error. It was removed because of the pictures of the bodies as an error. And they had to kind of backtrack. So it's interesting that and I know we've talked about also the young boy, Alan Kurdi,
yes,
that image of him that was shared on social media. So now they're running into some interesting questions on social media. Is this graphic content? Can this be shared? Should this be shared? And it seems that Facebook is saying it should be shared. It was a mistake that they flagged that, but it's an interesting topic as we go forward, for sure. Today is also International Literacy Day, so hashtag International Literacy Day has been trending. A lot of people taking to social media, sharing their favorite books or book recommendations. One thing that I saw that I really liked was somebody put up a map of all the local libraries in their area and said, if you don't know where the library is, here's how you find it. Go today and check out a book.
That's great.
So I thought that was wonderful. And then some interesting things, too, that you wouldn't necessarily think about literacy. Some people talking about Braille and learning Braille, how you go about doing that. So another aspect of literacy, some famous quotes about literacy. There was one from Brigham Young here in the U.S. that said, if you teach a man to read or educate a man, you educate a man. If you educate a woman, you educate a generation. So it was an interesting concept for not just literacy, but for women's rights as well. So a lot of people taking that and kind of expanding it to different topic areas, but a great celebration around the world of books and reading. So and people are seizing on that on social media, which is nice.
Yeah, we are.
Yeah, and then finally, Sam Smith is trending this morning. He is the British singer, well known for his album In the Lonely Hour. It was nominated for many awards last year. He's going to be singing the new James Bond film called Writings on the Wall, becoming the first solo British man since Tom Jones with Thunderball in 1965.
Cool.
50 years later, they get another British solo man. I think they saw that Adele did so well with Skyfall last year, or the last movie, that they said, let's go with another Brit, another solo act, and one that's a very soulful singer. So that song should be coming out soon. The movie comes out in October and November of this year, so we'll hopefully be hearing it soon.
Yeah, I think a lot of James Bond's fans will be anxiously awaiting that.
Yes.
All right. Thanks very much, Andrew. That's social media editor Andrew Palshevsky. This is VOA.
Here's Science in a Minute.
A new Japanese study finds that binge-watching television can kill you.
Yeah, but my objective.
What color I see?
Shut. December 7th.
Binge-watching, or viewing a number of a television program's episodes in one sitting, has become a popular pastime in parts of the world. This 18-year study involving more than 86,000 people revealed that those who sit and watch a lot of television in a day have a higher risk of dying from a pulmonary embolism, which is a sudden blockage or blood clot in one of the lung's pulmonary arteries. The researchers found that those who watched an average of 5 or more hours of television per day had twice the risk of dying from a pulmonary embolism than others who watched less than 2.5 hours a day. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, we hear the music of Canadian Indian singer Rajab Matir. In Guatemala, a comedic actor and political novice is leading after Sunday's first-round election to replace former president Otto Pérez Molina. The former president was caught up in a massive corruption scandal that forced his resignation last week, followed by his arrest. Jimmy Morales, who ran on an anti-corruption campaign, captured nearly 24% of the vote, compared to his two rivals, businessman Manuel Baldazón and former First Lady Sandra Torres, each getting about 19% of the vote. Rice University Latin American expert Mark Jones tells International Edition's Victor Beatty the rise of Morales was a recent phenomenon, and until the bribery scandal erupted, businessman Baldazón was favored to win.
With growing concerns about corruption in Guatemala, which has resulted in previously the resignation of the vice president and most recently the resignation and the arrest of President Otto Pérez Molina, the issue of corruption has skyrocketed to become the major issue among Guatemalan voters. And since Baldazón is widely seen as part of the old corrupt machine, his support plummeted. And Morales, he's an unknown in politics. He's very well known as a comedian. But since he's untouched by political corruption, he became a lightning rod for all of the support for people throughout the country who wanted to send a message against the corrupt old political system. And since he was the leading candidate who was not associated with the old way of doing politics, he received a decent amount of support, close to a quarter of the vote. As he heads into the runoff, he'll be facing Sandra Torres, whose wife divorced in part for political reasons from Alvaro Colom, who was the president before Pérez Molina. Morales is likely to be favored simply because Torres also is linked to the old-style politics and also will be opposed by many people in Baldazón's party leader, which remains a very strong and influential force throughout the country. So they're likely to be working for Morales, in part because I think they believe that they would likely have more influence under a Morales government than under a Torres government.
Isn't it interesting that Italy elected a former comedian? Now we have the same thing in Guatemala, and you have a strong anti-establishment move in the Republican Party here in the U.S.
It speaks to the desire among many voters throughout the world for change. And one advantage that actors or people that are TV personalities have is they come in with a high level of name recognition, which is a plus in politics, but they don't have the minus of being associated with all the negatives that are people often associate with the political system. And particularly in cases like Guatemala, where there is so much corruption, you know, up to the point where the vice president and president are widely viewed to be involved in a corruption ring related to import taxes and bribes paid for by companies to either not pay their import taxes or to pay lower than the legal amount.
Corruption is a major issue worldwide. Can Guatemala get a hold of its problem?
Unfortunately, while the Morales candidacy may be seen as a breath of fresh air, assuming he's elected and he arrives in office in January, he isn't very well prepared to actually govern. And that's one underlying problem that many non-political candidates often experience, in that while they have high levels of popularity due to success in sports or entertainment, they often have very little experience actually in terms of governance. And once they arrive in office, it becomes very difficult to govern. And that's particularly the case in Guatemala, which has a very fragmented party system, which has high levels of corruption, as well as an elite that's going to resist any effort to change the status quo.
That's Mark Jones of Rice University. Jones says although Morales will likely win the October 25th runoff, the irony is he will likely be unable to enact any of his program given his lack of political experience, little support in Congress, and the resistance of the elite to raising taxes. American actor Martin Milner, who starred in two hit television series reflecting America's love affairs with cars, has died at 83. Friends and family confirmed Milner's death but gave no details. A child actor born in Detroit, Milner made numerous early film and TV appearances before starring in the 1960 series Route 66, named for the iconic U.S. highway. Milner and co-star George Maharis travel the country in a Chevrolet, finding themselves involved in the lives and problems of people they met in the large cities and small towns. Route 66 went off the air in 1964, and Milner soon found himself behind the wheel of another vehicle, a Los Angeles police patrol car in the hit series Adam 12.
One Adam 12, a 211 in progress. One Adam 12, handle code 3.
Well, unlike the glamorous and exciting lives of TV private eyes, Adam 12 showed that most police cases are mundane and the work routine, but still compelling. The series ran from 1968 until 1975, and like Route 66, still remains popular. This is VOA.
Hashtag VOA. It's a weekly show, Tuesdays at 1730 UTC, where we bring you the top topics of the week. But the show lives on social media every day with your daily video shorts, What's Trending Wednesday, and the Friday Fast Five. Subscribe to the show at YouTube. You can find us at hashtag VOA. You can reach me at Twitter, at Perry Cal, or talk to the show anytime. Please don't forget to like us on Facebook. We like to be liked. We love to be seen. And you can reach us anytime.
Hi, my name's Larry London. Welcome to Border Crossings, your request and dedication program here at the Voice of America. 1500 Universal, Monday through Friday, we're there for an hour playing your favorite music. You can send an email in and request your favorite songs by your favorite artist. You can also phone in as well. We have great contests and surprise guests from time to time. Border Crossings, every single day during the week at 1500 Universal, here on the Voice of America.
This is International Edition. Canadian Indian singer Raghav Mathur describes his music as unabashedly pop. But recently, his song, Until the Sun Comes Up, has been used to raise awareness of the needs of the developing world, especially in Africa. VOA's David Byrd takes a look at the song and how it changed the lives of some Tanzanian schoolchildren and the singer.
Been so long, I'm waiting on you, baby, but I can feel it in the air tonight.
If you listen to the words of Canadian crooner Raghav's song, Until the Sun Comes Up, you might think it is just another dance-based pop tune. You wouldn't know it is helping to transform the lives of school children in a small African village.
Here we go tonight, baby, you and I, where the stars shining bright. It's just the two of us until the sun comes up.
Raghav says that when he learned that there are currently more than 1 billion people living in the world without electricity, he wanted to help.
That 1.3 billion people have no electricity. And so when I say that number, people often think, I mean to say a million. I mean, it's a sixth of the planet has zero electricity. And until you go there, and not just go there, but experience the, or hear the stories of the negative experiences through the kerosene industry, you can't really totally understand the impact.
So he teamed with Solar Aid, a nonprofit dedicated to eliminating the kerosene lamp, to distribute 320 solar-powered lights to school-age children in Tanzania. Raghav says he got the idea from watching an old YouTube video.
And they take a bucket of water and they put it in a village in like India or Bangladesh or somewhere, in what is clearly an impoverished village. And in it they've put a light. And I think at first people kind of look at it like, you know, what is this hanging around here? And throughout the YouTube video, you see people start coming up to it, playing with it, and the joy that it creates. And I thought, well, what a great way to depict joy if we could incorporate that in like a pop record.
Just as the sun comes up. Here we go. Until the sun comes up.
Raghav teamed with rapper Nelly and Bollywood star Abhishek Bachchan to film the reaction of the students when they received the lights. The singer says that the joy seen in the video is real. None of it was staged or choreographed.
Their idea of in their homes or in the school would have been the use of kerosene. And when the sun went down, that's the climax of the video. They kind of started partying without, it wasn't choreographed and it wasn't shot to be a music video. They just were having such a great time.
The 34-year-old Canadian singer says he hopes his song and the video will inspire other musicians to become socially active and aware. I'm David Byrd, VOA News.
That is the music of Raghav Mathur. Well, in other news, the Vatican says Pope Francis will unveil new procedures Tuesday aimed at streamlining the Roman Catholic Church's costly and complicated process of annulling marriages. The new rules were created by a commission created by the pontiff a year ago. They were to simplify the procedure while safeguarding the principle of the indissolubility of marriage. Catholic doctrine does not recognize divorce, and members who divorce and remarry are considered to be living in sin, and they're banned from receiving communion and other church sacraments. Under the current annulment procedure, a church tribunal must find that the previous marriage was bound to fail. The reasons may vary, including a lack of maturity, failing to understand that marriage is a lifelong commitment, or that one of the spouses did not want children. Catholics have long complained that it can take years to get an annulment, saying the current procedures are outdated. And that's our show. Please visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States is concerned about ongoing abuses of religious freedom in China. At a press briefing, Deputy Spokesperson Mark Toner cited as a recent example the detention of prominent Christian human rights lawyer Zhang Kai, who, with his assistants, was taken away by police on August 25th in the southeastern city of Guangzhou. A Beijing-based lawyer, Mr. Zhang, had been advising a number of Christian churches in their fight against a government campaign in Zhejiang province to remove crosses and demolish churches. Reportedly, he is now facing up to 6 months in secretive detention on suspicion of threatening state security and creating a disturbance. The detention of Mr. Zhang demonstrates that China's crackdown on human rights lawyers and its repression of religious freedom is continuing. U.S. Ambassador at Large for International Religious Freedom, David Saperstein, recently traveled to China to discuss religious freedom with Chinese government officials, religious leaders, and civil society representatives. The State Department reported that Ambassador Saperstein noted some positive developments in China, including the growth of religious communities in the country and a significant increase in the contributions of faith-based organizations to Chinese society. But the State Department noted that Ambassador Saperstein also raised a number of concerns regarding the Chinese government's human rights violations pertaining to religious freedom. He called for an end to the ongoing campaign of cross removals and church demolitions in Zhejiang province and an end to harassment of members of unregistered religious groups. He urged Chinese authorities to reassess counterproductive policies, including restrictions on the religious practice of Tibetan Buddhists and Uyghur Muslims. In addition, the State Department reported that Ambassador Saperstein conveyed the U.S. government's deep concern over the recent detention of many human rights defenders and religious leaders. The United States wants to see Zhang Kai released, along with all Chinese citizens who are being detained and persecuted because of their exercise of the fundamental human rights of freedom of religion, expression, and assembly. China, like all nations, must recognize that protecting and promoting those freedoms make up the foundation of every stable, prosperous, and just society.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.